When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Cavallo di battaglia, and welcome to Shift F1, a podcast about speedy race cars. That, by the way, is Italian for battle horse.
Oh my goodness.
Battle horse.
That's my favorite Blizzard game.
Battle horse refers to someone's area of expertise.
Oh, that's my battle horse.
Yeah.
What's your battle horse, Drew Scanlon? Is a Formula One?
go check the Apple Podcast reviews. I think it's fair to say that driving race cars is Max Verstappen's battle horse.
That's true. That's true.
I'm joining me alongside Danny O'Dwyer. How are you, Danny?
Great. I'm delighted to be joining you and you this week, mm-hmm. as we are without Rob Zachney, who is on assignment somewhere in parts Indeed. Unknown.
That's right. If you are new to this podcast, a very warm welcome to you. And if you are new to Formula One itself, we recommend listening to our preseason primer episode, which assumes no prior F1 knowledge and explains how the sport works and who everybody is. So if you'd like to go back and listen to that and get caught up, that's episode 216. Also, this show is supported. I'm sorry. rewind. This show would not be possible
Thank you.
Without our audience at patreon.com/shiftf1. Every month we release an ad-free version of the podcast. No ads.
No ads.
Hashtag no plus. No ads.
Hashtag shift F1 plus.
Oh, there you go.
There you go.
There's already plus in the logo type.
Shift so. Plus F1 plus. Yeah.
Yes.
Perfect. SEO.
Yep. There's an ad. You can get an ad-free version of the podcast, bonus podcasts and videos exclusively for our patrons that cover racing documentaries and films, F1 video games, experiments with the racing series, and a lot of weird things. So if you would like to support the show and get access to all that fun stuff, head over to patreon.com/shiftf1 or click the link in the show notes. What do we have going on this month, Danny?
Our review of the first 5 episodes of Initial D went up just about a week ago, so you can go check that out, as well as the massive back catalog of patron-exclusive podcasts. I don't know what we're doing this month. Originally, we were going to do Gran Turismo, which is hitting the theaters pretty soon, I think, sometime this month. But, of course, we are in solidarity.
I think it was last month, Danny. But
was it last month? Was it actually out?
That struck work.
It is, so. Exactly. Yeah, we're not crossing no picket lines. And the pickets are still up, so I don't know. Maybe we'll keep going with Initial D.
Figure it out.
That was dope. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, maybe we will. Does that make us the subsequent Ds?
If we're Initial D, subsequent D. Is that what it is? Subsequent is after initial? You're right, yeah.
Yeah.
What about current D? Maybe we're the current D and then subsequent.
Maybe you're the
comes.
Current D and I'm the current. Subsequent.
We're both current Ds. Yeah, you're right.
That's right. Yeah,
that's why Rob's not here. Exactly.
Well, but what is an R but a D with two more legs?
Jesus Christ, get me out of this conversation. Massive thanks, of course, to all of our amazing title sponsors. Agave ATX, Cyphus Training, Turf SES, Alex Medina, Ash Team Blackjack, Michael Maves, Gordy's Army, At Talking Autos, Olivia Evans, TelemetryDeck.com, FTC, Drew Stewart, Bailey Foot, Abdullah Althani, Jason Chadwick, Abraham Getchell, The Space Above Us, Bunny Fiend, Sniggs, Alex Goucher, Max Faltar, Circuit Demon, Troy Stammer, Umberto Roca, William Rumpf, Irvine Clinical Research, Lachlan the Madden Man, and Jason Kelly. And thank you to all the people. When I was at PAX West this past weekend talking video games, thanks to all the people who came up and said, hey, Shift F1's great.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, always fun meet Formula One fans at a video game convention. That's our Venn diagram. That's our battle horse. Is that what it was?
It is, yep. Yeah.
Gamers who like F1.
You'd be surprised, or maybe you wouldn't. I mean, they're both games of a kind, sports and games. That's CloudMap's whole thing. It's all, everyone plays games in one
Technical,
way or another.
Yeah, fun.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's jump right into the fun, Danny. This one will be a little, at least from my perspective, I'm going to preemptively thank you for taking the lift on a lot of this. I was I was AFK over the weekend. Decidedly, I was backpacking in the Sierra Mountains, so did not have access to
beautiful
F1 TV.
You were in parts unknown. Did you get any of that rainstorm, by the way? There was a lightning storm. You did? Because I know that was a big Burning Man sort of cloud. On its way to Burning Man, all of the clouds flew over Northern California. So
yeah. Thankfully, though, it actually benefited us because on our way back, we did not hit Burning Man traffic because they were all stuck.
Oh, that's crazy. That's wild. Oh, you were that far north. You were okay. Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Very cool. Yeah. I forget that road from Reno and all that. That's where it's northeast of Reno. That's where Burning Man is, right?
Is it? I don't even know. I just know somewhere that people leave San Francisco and then they come back.
Oh, sorry. That, of course. Yeah, yeah. Coming back to the Bay. Yes, they're out now. Who knows? None of those people watched Monza either.
I heard Chris Rock walked out.
Yeah, a fan picked him and Diplo up on the back of their flatbed truck. I saw the TikTok.
Amazing.
That's where we're at in the year of our Lord's 2023.
Look, that's car content. We can talk about it.
There was a lot of car content this weekend. There was Formula 1, Formula 2, Formula 3. I had a great time lapping this stuff up in the nice mornings. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, that was intentional. practices were pretty demonstrative of qualifying, I think. The Ferraris had pace pretty much right away, which was interesting again. It took a Hamilton
out of... As they always kind of seem to at Monza.
They do.
It's like a home field advantage.
Well, it's funny. I hedged my bets last week, and this always happens, because obviously Monza is like, what was it, 78% full throttle, but three of those sections are straights. So, the Red Bulls obviously have quite good top-line speed. Where the Ferraris excel is obviously that sort of like high speed corner. And I guess there's just kind of because there's not many corners in Monza and they're mostly high speed, I think that's where they end up making up a lot of that.
Do you think it's when they're designing the car, they say like, well, we could go this way or we could go this way with it. And then whichever way is more beneficial in Monza, maybe that's the way that they pick.
I have always wondered this, that how much of a bias do they have toward, because Monza is a circuit that, like we were talking about last week, that requires a totally different downforce package because you're constantly going at full tilt. They don't have to create much downforce. You know, you kind of get a lot of it for free. So, so it is an outlier. So it does beg the question that, like, obviously it is super important culturally for them. So I've always wondered that too. Like, you know, it's a bit of a causality thing where you're like, there's no way they do that, right? But like, maybe a little bit they do, you know. It's hard to tell, because it is always, it has been many times, obviously Leclerc won a few years ago, and it has been many times a different Ferrari at this track than the previous ones, you know, in the same
previous
season races. Yeah.
It always seems to be an anomaly, or at least that's how it exists in my head. And the whole setup thing, I think, is illustrated in the starting grid.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, the qualifying was interesting in that there was, I don't know, there was a couple of teams that were obviously doing well, and then there were a couple of teams that were like really struggling. The Alpines were both out in Q1.
Yeah.
They had a horrid time. They were late. They had a late lap, so they were down in the bottom and managed to get a lap in after the checkered flag. And improved like two places each, I think, and that was it. Stroll was like half a second off Magnussen in 19th. Stroll was like way behind, like seconds behind the leads.
Yeah, I mean, he fared poorly in the last race too. I mean, what's going on?
And I believe this was also Alonso's worst qualifying of the year, I think. He made it to Q3, but he was 10th. It all came down to the last lap. This was a fantastic Q3 because you had Leclerc, Sainz, and Verstappen all sort of juggling pole position between them. But ultimately, all three of them improved on their PBs on the last lap, and all three of them got what would have been considered pole-setting times had the other drivers not done so. Wow, so yeah, it okay. was it was pretty fantastic. I think they were within a tenth of a second of each other. I think it was like 0.07 of a second.
Yeah, you're other. Right.
Yeah.
294 so, or 0.294, 0.307, 0.361.
Wild. So yeah. just super, super fast. And who came out on top? Not Charles Leclerc, but...
Not Max Verstappen.
Not Max one Verstappen.
Carlos Sainz.
Yeah.
Pole position for Carlos at the Ferrari home track, followed by Max Verstappen, and then Carlos's teammate, Charles Leclerc, and the other Ferrari lines up third beside him. George Russell in fourth, then Sergio Perez, Alex Albon, Oscar Piastri, Lewis Hamilton, Lando Norris, and Fernando Alonso in 10th. Behind them, we've got Yuki Tsunoda, Liam Lawson, 12th place. Not bad, Liam. Mm. Nico Hülkenberg in 13th, Valtteri Bottas 14th, Logan Sargeant 15th, and then Zhou Guanyu, Pierre Gasly, Esteban Ocon, the two Alpines deep, as you said. Then we got Kevin Magnussen and Lance Stroll bringing up the rear.
Yeah, not a great weekend for him. Not a great weekend for Yuki Tsunoda, as it turns out.
Yeah, for Yuki.
Yeah, killer. Pulled off to the side. I think the engine was smoking.
Yeah, on the formation lap.
Died a death on the formation lap. So they ended up going around again and chopping a lap off the total. All the cars starting on mediums. This is one of those tracks.
Was it all of them?
I think it was. Am I crazy?
Did Hamilton start hard? Yeah, Hamilton and Bottas and Magnussen all started on hard tires.
Okay. Bottas and Magnussen, I believe, were 18 to the 19th.
Yeah.
So Hamilton.
Hamilton, though, what was he? Eighth?
He was having a hard time. I think P1, he was okay, and they changed some stuff for P2, and then he was struggling and kind of never found the car. So I think that alternative strategy, you can do this in a one stop, but it's just a case of how hot is it? You know, these tires are the way they are. You know, what's the undercut like? What's the overcut like? But most people were likely to do a two stop and to go to softs around lap 20 was kind of the idea. Put in a stint and then maybe get on mediums or hards after that, depending on safety cars and whatnot. Should I take you to the first lap?
Please.
So all clean through the first chicane. And this brought up something that I feel like is worth mentioning. The starts have been crazy good since, I don't know, the new regulations came in. Like this season has been remarkable. When in places we are often used to seeing incidents, Melbourne, Spa, here.
Good, you mean as in clean?
Clean, sorry. Yeah, I should clarify. Just in terms of first lap incidents happening, I think Zandvoort was the track that really stood out to me as how the hell have they gotten through here without anyone touching each other, especially in the races where Formula 2 and Formula 3 are on. And, you know, Monza is one of those tracks that I'm so used to seeing at least one car miss the chicane, go through the little escape road that they built there, or the sort of major escape road, which we see less of now because they built that little sort of, you know, you used to bumble over the top of the chicane if you missed the actual escape road with the foam padding, whereas now they have that little sort of, you know, shortcut basically, which then they sort of require people to give the places back. But yeah, everyone was remarkably... did really well. Hülkenberg did really well. He was three places up by the time that he got to the end of Curva Grande. No big movement up front, except for George Russell in fourth place, who was right up beside Leclerc coming up into Curva Grande. But if I remember correctly, I think Leclerc saved that position. Am I wrong? I think he did.
Okay.
There was a couple of battles there. There's lots of battles between those two chicanes. For overtakes, and lots of them ended up not happening. I think there's a version of this race where something's slightly different and we saw a lot more overtakes into these, but the sort of patter of the race seemed to largely be about overtakes not quite happening or people locking up and things like that.
I don't think there was a point where George Russell was ahead of Charles
third. No, I don't think so. Second lap, Albon gets past Piastri into sixth place. Alex having a great race here. Trying to get a kind of best position for the year that's in it.
A heck of a race last time, too. Like that Williams team, I don't... Something's in the water over there. It's been really, really fun to watch.
They must have patched their software, Drew. They must have gotten
that's right. They got more inventory software.
They got off Macromedia InDesign for making the fireworks or whatever they're using.
FileMaker.
So Sainz managed to get like a half second gap on Verstappen maybe, but once DRS sort of kicks in, that gap is starting to you know, it's definitely not increasing. Verstappen then starts to pile on the pressure around lap six. They have a, you know, sorry, lap five, I should mention, Verstappen comes on the radio and says he's already sliding a bit. So yeah, he's starting to see the tires maybe losing a little bit of that early grip. Sainz then aggressively defends Max into turn one, I would say. Although I would say that Max was driving on a line that was disappearing. Sainz was ahead and Sainz drove the racing line. And Max,
yeah, I mean, you see this a lot in this race. So I watched the race in 30 on F1 TV, which is, I don't know that I'd ever watched it before, but it's a great, you know, if you've only got 30 minutes, as I did, good way to do it. And this, you know, turn one move came up so many times. And David Coulthard, I think, said something to the effect of like, listen, you know, you can be alongside on the outside going into that turn, but, you know, the other driver has to make the turn. So, yeah, and there's only kind of one way through it. So you can't really say like, oh, he pushed me off, you know, like, cause what else is he going to do? He's got to like, he can't just, you know, disappear.
Which was the Max Verstappen argument we had 2 years ago at Hamilton when they flipped each other here on this corner, which is the same thing where Max feels like, I don't know, he's a passionate driver, he's a champion, he's you know, aggressive. He knows he's going to get this place anyway, probably. But he said, I think the words were, that was naughty. So it was kind of a little bit tongue in cheek as well.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, Sainz had the, you know, Sainz has to give him space on the entrance to that turn because the racing line is on the inside. But then the racing line goes to the inside of the next turn, which is on the other side of the track. And Sainz is under no requirement to leave space, you know, there. He has to drive the racing line. So, yeah, Max, I guess, little tap, not much in it. They didn't even touch, I don't think. But Max pulls out. They went. I was trying to think, was that like the first, not the first overtake he's had to do all year, but like the first kind of real battle?
Yeah, he hasn't had
battle?
A lot of like actual battles.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, I think he has started in not pole position a lot, but generally, you know, you just wait a couple laps for DRS to turn on and then he breezes by. But yeah, you're right. We haven't actually seen him do much battling this season.
Yeah, so that was kind of cool and also a little bit depressing to realize at the same time. At this stage,
Danny, wait till we get to the end of the race.
Yeah, true. So at this stage, some folks are starting to pit for softs, so they're sort of confirming their two-stop-ness. Lap 14, Perez and Russell battling down turn one. This time, Perez sort of breaks late and doesn't make the turn two. Hilariously, Russell also doesn't make it, which is... Yeah.
And I wonder, as I was watching this, I wondered, like, are they... At what point are you looking at the apex and breaking, or like whatever your breaking point is? And at what point are you waiting for the other guy to break? Because if you're trying to outbreak him, aren't you waiting for him to break and then you break right after? Right.
Or you know, but you do have a throttle on the brake in a way, you know, you have.
Sure.
You can engage the brake and decide to brake less, but I guess it's.
But if he blows it and, you know, goes straight on. Right. If you're watching him, then you're going to do that too.
Exactly. Which kind of felt like that's what happened here.
Yeah.
Russell was watching Perez maybe. Similarly, on lap, I believe it was, they just clicked over to 20 when they crossed the line. It was 15. Sainz locks up defending into turn one, kind of as Russell was attempting to do it, loses a bit of distance to Verstappen, who's behind him. And then before we get down to the chicane after Curva Grande, Verstappen is past him and into first place. Similarly, on the next lap, Perez doing the sort of little brother version of this and getting past George Russell finally. This basically instigates the changes for Sainz and Russell as we click onto lap 20, which is where the window was for a one stop. Then there's an incident. I'm not sure if it's when Russell comes out immediately or if it's the next lap, but Russell and Ocon have a little coming together where Russell seems to sort of take up a little bit too much space, pushes into
it's after
Ocon.
Russell pits, so which is lap 20.
Is it immediately then? So he's coming out? Yeah.
I think so, yeah.
It's flagged as under investigation, and then a couple of laps later we get confirmation that Russell has a penalty for this coming together. But both cars manage to get around regardless. Yeah, lap 21, Leclerc and Verstappen decide to come in. Perez is in the lead now, interim leader for the moment.
Yeah, and you get this, like, you know, the undercut is apparently really strong here. And so they're both teams are kind of watching this because, you know, even though Verstappen is now ahead and Perez is now ahead of Russell, you've still got Leclerc there in the mix, Sainz there in the mix. You want to be sure that if you're Red Bull, that you're not going to get undercut. But there are, of course, two cars, and they don't want to double stack because that'll, you know, that also costs time. Like, it's not zero time that, you know, you're sitting behind your teammate. And also, you don't want to get blocked by the other team because I think their garages are right next to each other, their pit boxes.
Right.
So you don't want to have to be held while the other guy is coming in. So they do split not split the strategy, but they do their pit stops on different laps.
Sainz then, when Leclerc comes out of the pits, Sainz does manage to get the jump on him. So the overcut did work, as you said. Then I have an interesting note on lap 22 where I said Ferrari passed Perez, which I'm wondering, is that both of them? I'm actually not sure if Sainz, Perez hasn't pitted yet at this stage. So I'm not sure if both of them did or if it was just Sainz. Apologies. Maybe I was quite... I had a 12 hour, I watched this a day late because I was in Seattle for PAX, or I didn't watch it a day late. I watched it hours late because I was in Seattle for PAX and I flew up that morning and flew back that night and didn't realize that would mean I was awake for 23 hours.
Oh my God.
So I was really tired when I got home. I didn't get home until like 3 a.m. So I was watching this with like 6 hours sleep, I think, having been up for 24 hours.
Boy,
we
really didn't plan this very well, did we?
So this was a bit of a weird one. I did watch the whole race though. So I was, that's probably actually why these notes are a bit mad.
Great. Yeah. Well, so a pair is pitted on lap 22 and Leclerc and Sainz had done their pits, Leclerc on 21 and Sainz on 20.
20.
And so when Perez came out,
Ferrari pass signs. There we go.
That for both Ferraris, past Perez. Past Perez. Yeah.
So there you go. The notes were right. I just needed to believe in my older self, younger self. Ferrari past Perez. Mm-hmm. Then Lando passed Piastri into turn one. A little bit of argy bargy here. A little bit of an aggressive overtake.
Yeah, a lot of good teammate on teammate action
there was
in this race.
They brought this up as a we might check into it, but no further investigation required. Racing incident between a couple of bros. Sainz and Leclerc then pass Hamilton, but Hamilton, of course, is on this one stopper on his hards. So he is he's pitting basically at the end of this lap.
Yeah, he's not racing them really. You know, so he doesn't fight too much. And also he can't really because his tires are really old. Although he's in that weird moment, right, where the hard tires are old, but you have to go on to the mediums if you're doing a one stop and then pull out a lot of laps on those too. So it's tough. He even says like, oh man, we got to go to the end on these
22 laps on a pair of mediums when 20, as they were starting on mediums was the pit window. And as we saw,
I guess 24 that Hamilton has to
do. Is it 24? It was lap 27 of.
And no one else.
Yeah. More. Yeah.
No one else did a 24 lap stint. To start, Piastri did a 23 lap.
Bottas and Magnussen decided to put on some softs earlier, I guess. They were like, screw this. We're going to do it. Hamilton has to make these tires last, but that doesn't stop him from overtaking Fernando Alonso on lap 29. Went and did it. There's a great battle here between Lando Norris and Alexander Albon, which anytime they dance, the commentary team always happy to tell us that they're mates. You know, they're friends. These guys are friends.
Listen,
they're chums. You know,
they gotta fill 2 hours somehow.
A couple of buddies, you know. There's a great quote from Lando before. What was it before Zandvoort or something? Where he was like, they were talking about Verstappen's home race, and he was like, he was born in Belgium. He was like, so was I. I don't think Lando was born in Belgium, but his dad is Belgian. So he was like, this is as much my home race as it is for Verstappen's.
Amazing.
Which is, just mad bants from Lando. Anyway, he tries it on Albon in turn one. Alexander does a great job of defending it, but it won't be the last time those two friends dance a dance. Perez tries it again on Leclerc on turn one. He's trying to get back ahead of him after picking up some of the gap after pitting. Some dust kicked up at the chicane there. Perez does finally get past Leclerc on the pit straight on lap 32. So just a bit of patience. And that Red Bull on those new tires are getting the speed required. And then suddenly it's a different race. It feels like the Red Bulls are able to match, which we've seen before, right? They just handle tires really well. You get to the end of a race and these Red Bulls are, you're right. Yeah, he's so good at that as well. They just have, reminds me of like a marathon runner, the ones with the stamina. You just sort of see them rise to the surface near the end. Ocon gets past Magnussen on lap 33, which is, I should have put down the position there. I don't know why I didn't, but fair play to Ocon.
Norris, 33, you said?
Lap 33.
Yeah, let's see. I got you Mag. Here. Or rather, racefans.net has you here. That was for 17th place.
Great. I'm glad I noted it. I think good. That probably says a lot about what was going on in the latter half of this race. Got a little bit less competitive, let's say. Norris tries again on Albon on turn one, but cuts the corner, has to give it back. Hamilton tries to overtake Piastri. Piastri actually does not make the corner, and it forces Hamilton off as well.
Mm-hmm.
But there was no other action taken from that one.
Did you feel like, at least watching the race in 30, it was a lot of footage of the front of the field? Certainly for like the first half, because that top three was, you know, they were really close and trying moves on each other. And it felt to me like if you've ever gone back and watched a race from like the 90s, that's kind of all it was. Hey, here's the front of the field. And, oh yeah, I guess there are some cars back there. But anyway, who's leading?
Which in a way, like we were talking about Zandvoort where we did not see Max for the entire race, basically, you know what I mean? Like, so in a way, maybe it's good we did see these, but no, you're totally right. And also, I think the fact that Monza has the fewest corner and the fewest corners on the calendar also kind of makes it have the fewest camera angles in a way. So you kind of, it does get a little bit, not repetitive, but like it feels like a lot of things are happening in the same spots, and they are because there's still corners. Yeah. So they're right, like turn one, we didn't see much action on the Lesmos, for instance, this time around. We didn't see any overtaking on the way into the Parabolica at all. That often has been a DRS overtaking spot.
People tried it, I think. There was a lot of side-by-side there. I don't know how many people were successful.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, though, like watching qualifying and watching them go through that chicane, these cars, even though they are large, dance through there. I think Logan Sargeant in particular, I was like, oh man, it's just standing it on its tires.
Yeah, slide a little bit.
Yeah.
It's good stuff. Perez is now caught up to Carlos Sainz. He's trying to get past him on lap 41, fails to do so. Hamilton is also trying to overtake Piastri now on Curva Grande and does so.
Curva.
Kind of.
Grande.
And we have some contact here. Piastri's front left wing gets mauled by Hamilton, who does the overtake, but then basically just squeezes him two times.
Yeah.
Like he doesn't give him the space. It seemed rookie is strong, but it's not the type of thing you'd expect Lewis Hamilton to do, for instance.
Sloppy.
Sloppy's fair. Yeah. Thankfully, I think it was a while now, maybe 6 years ago or so, that they actually asphalted that whole thing. That all used to be Beach Central. Imagine all the cars that have missed that corner, like even on this race. That used to all be gravel. And you'd just be like, good night, Irene. Now they have that little road, escape road you can take. That in years past, that would have been both cars out in a safety car. But this time around, Piastri, I'm guessing, had to come in to fix his front wing. Hamilton under investigation and gets a penalty. That's both of the Mercedes getting penalties during this race.
Yeah, Piastri drops from 8th to 14th.
Yeah, that's a shame.
Pit stop, yeah.
Yeah. Perez trying again on Carlos Sainz, lap 42, and then a lap later, he decides he wants to skip turn one to overtake Sainz, and that's not allowed, so he has to give the place back.
Lap 45. So many of these battles lasted for so long.
Yeah, it was cool to see them have to take their time doing it.
And I don't know if it's because of, you know, the Red Bull car is an anomaly, or because the, like, you know, new regulations to cut down on wake turbulence are working, but I feel like you didn't used to see cars stick with and try these moves over and over and over again. Weren't able to.
Or they had a window where they do it, and then they were like, my tires.
Drop back for 10 laps.
They would intentionally drop back, exactly.
Right.
Because it wasn't worth it. And that doesn't seem to be the case anymore.
And
it's not just the Red Bulls against the Ferraris where they feel like in clean air, they're going to make that up anyway. You're seeing it with, you know, Hamilton fighting with Lando, with, you know, behind, you know, why do I swear my brain just locks up everything time I think of Alexander Albon because of Esteban Ocon. And I just go Ocon right away. And then my brain's like, which one is it? Anyway,
your brain locks up into turn one.
It does, exactly.
Smoke coming out of your ears.
Hamilton gets past Norris on lap 45. Sargent and Bottas are under investigation as well for a little coming together.
Did you see a replay of that?
I didn't. It came up as a graphic and I did not know what it was. And I don't think they ever showed it during the full race. I do not remember seeing it.
So I'm looking at the lap chart here, and Sargent was in 10th place, a points paying position, for one lap, and then Bottas passes him, and then we get that that investigation. So
that's interesting. So that's Valtteri Bottas who started in 18th, I want to say, making his way into the points.
He started 14th.
Oh, okay. I'll take it back then. That's not as impressive. It was Magnus.
But that would have been Sargent's first point, is what I'm saying.
Oh, you're right. Yeah. And we missed it. Lap 46, Perez does eventually get past Carlos Sainz into second place. We now have a Red Bull 1-2. We haven't mentioned Max Verstappen in a while. Since that initial overtake, he has disappeared into the sunset. Mm-hmm. Lap 46, we're only, you know, five laps from the end of the race here, and Sainz, after all that fighting with Perez, his tires have felt the brunt of it, and his teammate Charles Leclerc is trying to get past him on the pit straight. There's a lockup, and the two of them, I swear to God, if you had a wafer thin mint and tried to put it between these two tires, you would fail to. I believe David Coulthard said, I believe I have seen a ghost car, because he could not believe that the tires did not touch. I swear to God, it was like, I squealed when I, because they had the in-car view from Sainz, I believe it was. Absolutely insane. Sainz does manage to defend that position. But
isn't that right after they say, like, free to race, no risk?
Well, it was literally, it was probably like, you know, the way there's a bit of a delay. It was probably like half a lap where he said that ago, but like he said that. And then almost as the graphic disappeared, they were locking up into turn one.
Right. I mean, that's, you know, we've seen what can happen. The magic that can happen when two cars drift around the same corner.
Absolutely, yeah, exactly. The ghost of whatever the name of that hill is.
Right, yeah.
Check out our initial D Patreon only podcast. That was a nice endemic plug for our Patreon.
It really was. That's just so good. Let's watch more of it.
Yeah, so good. Albon is struggling a little bit here. Norris tries to get past him again, leading up to that chicane after Curva Grande. Albon's losing grip, but he manages to keep it. Sainz is locking up again as well on lap 49 as he's defending for Leclerc. Piastri gets past Lawson, but kind of looks like he drove off the track to do it. I don't think anything happened there, but that was lap 50.
Yeah.
And then, this was no risk. Was it? This was no risk. Lap 51. Okay. We have it here. No risk from Ferrari. Huge lockup from Leclerc trying to throw it down the inside to get past Carlos Sainz. So Carlos Sainz, we know from previous races has a little, he's a little bit double move naughty. He's a little bit moving in the breaking zone adjacent. He has done this in the past where he'll kind of
Carlos Sainz fade.
Yeah, he'll not pick a side. So he'll kind of drift to the left and then he'll defend to the right super late and then he'll come back to the racing line. Or so he kind of fades it a little bit that way.
Yeah.
And he's doing a little bit of this, but not like a lot. And Leclerc, I think, is like trying not to crash both Ferraris at Monza in front of the Tifosi. So
that
like,
would be bad.
He doesn't have to overly aggressively defend signs. I don't think he does, but I had it in the back of my mind. Like, is he going to double move? I do think somebody said it at some stage to him. I forget who. In my head, some reason it was Bottas. Was there some stage where they were close to each other? Somebody, and that was last week, maybe. Regardless, Leclerc kind of doesn't try it again. That's kind of.
Oh, you might have been Perez on saying that about either Sainz or Leclerc. I think
it was Sainz, and I think it was which he kind of knows he's. I think they've had that before, the two of them. He manages to defend it, but then Sainz has a weirdly slow sector two, and Leclerc ends up getting up behind him again. Not sure what happened there, if his tires are just completely shagged and he has no grip at all. Regardless, Max Verstappen wins another award-winning win. He gets 10 in a row. Remarkably,
never before done in the history of Formula One, which has a driver won 10 times in a row.
Which I was surprised about, considering the dominance in years past of Sebastian Vettel, of Schumi, of course, of Hamilton. I found that surprising. But
also,
do it.
Neither has a team ever won 15 in a row.
In a row, that's wild.
Which Red Bull has also just done.
Remember when Red Bull couldn't buy a victory like 3 or 4 years ago, and now it's so mad how the pendulum swings.
Yeah, so I just finished reading Adrian Newey's autobiography, How to Build a Car, which I recommend.
Learn how to build a car, and then it's really annoying.
Yeah, maybe it's not exactly a step by step. I haven't read honestly a lot of racing books, but that one I
just have one which tells you who died recently.
That's right.
Which I also I'm not sure if I have to say.
But I recommend it. Anyway, one thing that I think that really stood out to me from reading that book is that, so he kind of got in very early on the Red Bull team. And they, from the beginning, really had an underdog attitude. Mm. And it's because they saw themselves as a drinks company going up against the titans of the auto industry. And I think they still have that. And I think that might be what rubs some people the wrong way. Like when you hear Christian Horner, kind of the way he talks about his team.
Yeah.
There is kind of no acknowledgement that they are so dumb. Well, I mean, there is. He clearly can't ignore that. But just kind of his tone, I think it's disparate from what the viewer
reality
sees.
Is like I can hear that when you're talking about like Ferrari or Mercedes and maybe even Alpine, you know, owned by Renault, but like no one's calling Williams the titans of the race of the automotive industry, or you know, like Aston Martin, like you know, AlphaTauri, really. Like
I think it's just, you know, it's all the you know, it's the kid who, you know, the rich kid always had the nicer car or something.
Right,
And then wanted to make a whole bunch of money and is now the richest person on earth and always thinks that, you know, someone's trying to cheat him. You know?
Oh, totally. Yeah, yeah,
it just, it feels a little bit like that. So
stories
I don't
know. Tell ourselves. It might be effective, though. Like,
clearly.
That type of mythology building, you know?
100%. Like, that is, I think that's probably why. You see them, you know, even though they haven't been until recently at the very top, they've been in the fight ever since they got into the sport.
I mean, they were at the top for like 5 years before Mercedes were dominant.
Yeah.
So, yep. But it's wild. And they're at the top this time, the top two, Verstappen coming in first, Perez coming in second. Sainz does manage to hold off Leclerc, for third place, but they come in pretty close behind each other.
What a great battle. Like, you know, and both of the teammate battles here, the McLarens and the Ferraris.
Not the Red Bulls.
No. Giving each other, you know, not fighting too hard, but right up against, like you said, Danny, literally could not get much closer in fighting their teammates. Put on a good show.
Yeah, for the Tifosi. I'm sure they really enjoyed qualifying day. And, you know, I think being honest with themselves, which I'm sure most of them were, I think that was a pretty great result for Ferrari on the day. All things
you
got to
be happy with the podium.
Yeah. You would have taken it on the Thursday, you know?
Yeah. Shall I go through the rest of the finishers here?
Please do.
George Russell came home fifth, followed by Lewis Hamilton in sixth. Then Alex Albon, another fantastic performance from Mr. Albon in seventh place in his
Highest
Williams.
Finish.
Is that right? Highest finish for Albon. Yeah. Fantastic. Another 6 points for the
team. With Williams. Sorry, I should qualify.
True. Lando Norris in eighth, Fernando Alonso ninth, and Valtteri Bottas, the final points-paying position, in 10th. Behind him, we have Liam Lawson. Another job well done.
Nice work.
Ricardo's replacement. Although, you know, I thought Oscar Piastri had the worst hair in Formula One. I think I might have to give it to Lawson.
I got to look it up. Did he come at it with his helmet? He just had bad helmet hair.
It's just so petty, but I can't help when they show their full heads in front of on the race grid. Okay. Oscar Piastri 12th, Logan Sargeant 13th, Zhou Guanyu 14th, Pierre Gasly 15th. Behind him, Lance Stroll, Nico Hülkenberg, Kevin Magnussen, and then the DNFs of Esteban Ocon, or technically the DNS of Yuki Tsunoda.
Yeah.
And that is after the 5 second penalties were applied to Russell, Piastri, Hamilton, and Sargeant. Mm-hmm. So it actually was Sargeant who received the 5 second penalty with that collision with Bottas. And that was the Italian Grand Prix. We are going to take a break, and then we will be back with the news. The news, Danny.
The news.
Let's talk about it.
Out with the olds, in with the news.
Some driver news here.
Sure.
Silly season, I suppose, has kicked off, even though the headlines have not been so silly. We had the confirmation
sensible
that...
Sensible season.
Yeah, there you go. Just like soccer.
Yeah.
The Haas boys are sticking around. Kevin Magnussen and Nico Hülkenberg are staying for next year, as we mentioned in our previous show. Also, the Mercedes boys sticking around. Lewis Hamilton and George Russell both extended their contracts with Mercedes through 2025.
Lewis Hamilton says he has unfinished business in the sport, presumably some sort of fashion deal. Sorry, I couldn't help myself.
Whenever I hear the phrase unfinished business, I always think of the live action Casper film.
Oh my God.
Do you remember this film?
Yeah. With what's her face was in it?
Christina Ricci.
Christina Ricci. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Unfinished business was like the... They would say that's what results in a ghost.
Oh, you're right. Okay,
they say that phrase like 10 times in that movie.
A young Drew Scanlon was sort of like, this is my, you know, this is my first thinking about death in this cartoon with Wednesday Adams. And this
it wasn't a cartoon, it was real.
It wasn't real.
Casper was a documentary.
Maybe Casper was driving that ghost car that David Coulthard saw.
Amazing. I keep a spreadsheet here of the driver contracts, and I am counting four here who are not signed for the 2024 season. That is Sargeant, Zhou, and both AlphaTauri seats.
Okay,
so Ricardo and Tsunoda.
Yeah.
What
That's
do you think? What,
I'm surprised.
What,
that's all. Yeah. That is. Yeah, actually.
Yeah, a lot of 2024. 2024 is going to be interesting. That's when the enormous 5-year contract for Charles Leclerc runs out.
I can't believe it's been that long.
Yeah. All right, here, let me run down 2024. Ocon, Leclerc, Sainz, Magnussen, Hülkenberg, Piastri, Perez. And then we have nebulous ones because sometimes it's not quite clear what the contract is for.
Oh, yeah, of course.
At least 2024s are Bottas, Gasly, Alonso, and Albon.
All right.
And the only ones after that are Norris through 2025, both Mercedes boys now through 2025, and Max Verstappen through 2028.
He has plenty of time to have a bunch of crap years right at the end, just like Hamilton's been enjoying at the moment, you know?
I'm sorry. I forgot to mention Stroll, which I've just notated as LOL.
When Daddy sells the company.
Although, like, how long can he continue to be at the back of the field?
That's the thing. Like, I think we have fairly been somewhat respectful of his seat in years past because he has been putting in some decent work and getting some decent results out of it. He doesn't look like the type of guy, if you put him in a really good car, he'd be, you know, on the podium a lot, but he's doing all right. I can't begrudge him that bad. He's not Pastor Maldonado, but yeah, this year has been a nightmare. And I think it hasn't helped the fact that he's got Alonso in the other seat. So,
Aston Martin, if I'm reading UK company law correctly, is a publicly traded company. Mm. So they are answering to shareholders here when Lance Stroll is in the bottom of the field.
Well, time will tell. When's his contract?
Aston Martin Lagonda Global Holdings PLC.
I love holding things globally. I love to hold the globe.
You got the whole world, Danny, in your hands. Speaking of Danny's,
Danny Ricciardo will not be around to save us from Liam Lawson's hair for at least one race and possibly two of them. News coming from Red Bull, from Christian Horner, as reported by racefans.net, is when will Ricciardo be coming back? I think certainly Singapore. I don't think there's any chance he'll be ready for then. Uh-oh. Started that sentence. Really sounded like he was going to be back. And I would think I would be optimistic for Japan. So,
wow.
Sounds like he's definitely not back for Singapore, which is 2 weeks away. We don't have a race this weekend. And they would be optimistic for Japan.
Is it 2 weeks following that to Japan, or is it...
It's they're back-to-back.
Okay.
And then we have another double week, and then we are in Qatar, in Lusail. Okay. Going on, Horner says, he's got obviously mobility in the hand and he's into rehabilitation now, but what we've seen with motorcyclists is that rushing comebacks can sometimes do more damage. So I think that we just want to make sure he's fully fit before he gets back in the car. Maybe a good time to just check in on the end of the race, end of the season here. We do have 8 races remaining of the 22.
All?
Yeah, so really we're into the final third here, ladies and gentle folk. The Singapore Grand Prix in Marina Bay. Am I right in thinking that's... Were we back last year? I can't remember.
I think we had a Singapore last year.
Yeah, I think so. I had that with PAX as well. I was like, is this the first PAX since COVID? No, we were here last year. I was like, okay. So Singapore is back, a beautiful night race in the streets of Marina Bay.
Yes, we did have one last year. I rated it a 2 out of 4.
Fantastic. Can't wait for that. Great. Worth the wait. After that, we have Suzuka, which is always generally pretty dope. The Japanese Grand Prix. And then we have a week break, and then we are in Lusail for the Qatar Grand Prix. Then we have another 2 week break. Qatar is just sitting there in the middle on its own. Before we head on over to Austin, Texas, to the Circuit of the Americas for the United States Grand Prix, 22nd of October. 1 week after that, we're in Mexico City for that GP. 1 week after that, we're in Sao Paulo for Interlagos. Then we got another little gap of 1 week, heading back up to North America for Las Vegas. Another night race on November 18th, first time we've ever been there, of course. They wedged it in the penultimate race of the season before we skip on back to the Middle East to Yas Marina Circuit in Abu Dhabi to sunset the season on the 26th of November. Happy Thanksgiving. No, Thanksgiving is the previous week, isn't it? Is Las Vegas on? No, Thanksgiving's on between the two of them, I guess, is it? 18th, 16th? Yeah, Thanksgiving is like 22nd or something, right? 24th? Third Thursday of the... Is it?
Yeah.
Past my citizenship. Anyway, Ricciardo He's not going to be there for Singapore and Japan. Sorry, definitely not for Singapore. Maybe not for Japan, but
23rd.
Sounds like 23rd. Okay, yeah. So it's the weekend of Abu Dhabi. But all things sound like he, at the very least, will be back for Qatar, unless Liam Lawson and his beautiful locks of hair do the unthinkable and keep him out of the seat. One last piece of news here. The FIA confirmed that all 10 F1 teams complied with the 2022 cost cap. This is something that took a little bit longer last year. I think it wasn't until sometime in late October last year that we found out that three teams had not done right by the regulations. Williams failed to supply theirs on time, so they got a rap on the knuckles with that. Aston Martin failed on a procedural issue. Not quite sure what that was. And of course, Red Bull overspent by £1.86 million sterling last year.
I mean, who among us hasn't found that in their couch?
It's just the, what was that?
Easy to misplace.
It was the catering, wasn't that what it was?
I think that's what they chalked it up to, yeah.
Quote here from the FIA, as reported by racefans.net, the review has been an intensive and thorough process, beginning with a detailed analysis of the documentation submitted by the competitors. Additionally, there has been extensive checks on any non-F1 activities undertaken by the teams, which comprised multiple on-site visits to team facilities and careful auditing procedures to assess compliance with the financial regulations. The FIA cost cap administration notes that all competitors acted at all times in a spirit of good faith and cooperation throughout the process. There you go, folks. Can't blame it on the cost cap this year. These flying Red Bulls, they've got wings and they are on the way to sure constructor victory again in 2023.
Boy, non-F1 activities sounds very McCarthyist.
It does, yeah, doesn't it? Yeah.
The red scare. I mean, F1's color is red.
Is F1's color red?
I mean, guess on their website. Ferrari's color is red. And we're in Monza. Coincidence?
It was yellow a lot as well this past week.
That's true.
Which is pretty cool.
We're looking at a little McDonald's.
You know what also is red? My Formula One book, which I'm now going to try and look for while you talk about the fantasy standings.
Fantastic. Well, I should also, Danny, let everyone know the driver and team standings.
Of course.
Yeah. Because at the end of the Monza round, the standings look like this. Max Verstappen is on top. What do you know? With 364 points. Sergio Perez, his teammate, with 219. Fernando Alonso is in third of the Drivers' Championship. I'm very surprised at this. He really got out to an early lead. 170. Is his points total. We've got Lewis Hamilton in fourth with 164. That is a close battle. Carlos Sainz is in fifth with 117, thanks to that in part. Third place for Monza. His teammate Charles Leclerc right behind in sixth with 111. George Russell nipping at their heels with 109. Lando Norris, bit of a jump back in eighth place with 79 points. Then Lance Stroll also started strong, but hasn't added to his points total in a bit. He's got 47 in ninth place. Pierre Gasly, in 10th with 37, Esteban Ocon tied with Oscar Piastri in 11th place with 36 points. Alex Albon is in 13th with a whopping 21 points. I mean, how many seasons of Williams do you have to add up recently to get that total? Nico Hülkenberg.
21 of them.
Nico Hülkenberg is in 14th place with 9 points. Valtteri Bottas in 15th with 6. Then we've got Zhou Guanyu with 4, Yuki Tsunoda with 3, Kevin Magnussen with 2, and then Logan Sargeant, Liam Lawson, Nick DeVries, and Daniel Ricciardo all with 0 points. Mm. In the constructor standings, Red Bull Racing is on top with 583 points. Mercedes is in second with 273, Ferrari's in third with 228, Aston Martin's in fourth with 217. That's, you know, there's still a lot can happen before the end of the season. McLaren's in fifth with 115. Alpine is in sixth with 73. Williams, 21 points, thanks to Alex Albon. Gene Austin team are in eighth with 11 points. Alfa Romeo has 10 and Alfa Tauri, 3. Mm-hmm. If you would like to join the fantasy standings, you can do so using the link in the show notes. But here are the standings from the Italian Grand Prix. We have a 5-way tie
Wow, look at
for
that.
For second place, we have Time to Call _ Gene. Hmm? Justin's Flat Tires. Should try not to lock up so much, Justin.
Mm, yeah.
Hunt's Shunt. Haas of the Dragon.
And oh, that's good. I like that.
Yeah. Franklin Saint F1 Team.
Beautiful.
But overall, beat all those second placers. Number one, the Red Bullets.
There you go. They were, and they're appropriate. Given
yes,
the,
indeed.
The weekend Ferrari had.
But overall, the fantasy standings look like this. In third place, we have Lotus Begin Gentlemen. In second place, making up some places, jumping through the standings, we've got Big Swing and Racing. And in first place, still locking it down, paying the stroll toll.
Toll, yeah. We're going to be paying that stroll toll all the way.
Or we don't get no rolls.
We get that boys. Oh, mm.
Yep.
Yep.
All right. Well, those are the standings. You can also send us an email if you like at shiftf1podcast@gmail.com or f1.cool/emails. You can also hit us up on the internet using
internet.
The social links. In
use,
the
call
show
us
notes.
On internet.
There's so many socials.
Which internet do you use?
Well, I have yet to set up a Blue Sky account. Do we think we need to? We should probably
nope.
set up a Blue Sky account.
Just delete it all. Start
we
up
have
a Quake server.
About a Gopher site. That's us around the internet. Should we take it around the world of racing, then?
Let's race around the world! Yeah.
The World Rally Championship is in Lamia, Greece, for the Acropolis Rally.
Oh, I love it. I knew you were going to say it. I knew you were going to say it, and it still felt so good to hear it.
Oh, man. I feel like I'm playing an early 2000s Dreamcast game right now.
Yeah, right, yeah. Or like driving, there's all pillars everywhere and shit.
Yeah.
And like a god and like,
go
yeah.
underwater and it's Atlantis.
Awesome. Shields. Yeah.
The Goodwood Revival is this weekend, nice. Which is different from the Goodwood Festival of Speed. That's the one with the hill climb and the hay bales. This one is the one where old cars race around tracks.
Revived.
So, yes. Much like a ghost.
Much like a ghost. Casper will be there.
We've got those Craftsman trucks at the Kansas Speedway in Kansas City, Kansas.
Oh, the real Kansas City.
That's right. For the Kansas Lottery 200. Yep.
That's it. That's all I got. Nothing.
Yep. Well, check this out. NASCAR Xfinity Series, also at the Kansas Speedway in Kansas City, Kansas, for the Kansas Lottery 300.
300. Wow, look at that. Check it out.
Yeah.
Great. Yeah, it could really knock their heads together for these ones.
MotoGP is at Misano World Circuit Marco Simoncelli for the Misano Gran Premio di San Marino e della Riviera di Rimini.
Oh my God, look at all those little rolls of the tongue you did there.
I think I hurt my tongue.
That's incredible. Marco Simoncelli, it's been 12 years since his accident. I cannot believe that. It was 2011. That's crazy. Yeah.
Wow. The World Superbike Championship is at Magny-Cours in France.
Beautiful Magny-Cours. F1 used to race there.
Indeed. Mm-hmm. They also have DTM.
Oh, finally. Yeah. It's been weeks. Please relieve me.
Yeah, we are in Oberlungwitz, Deutschland, at the Sachsenring.
Don't talk about my Sachsenring here, please. That is private.
I believe this is the final race in the IndyCar season. We are at the WeatherTech Raceway Laguna Seca for the Grand Prix of Monterey.
Shit, we should go.
I will be riding bicycles this weekend.
I'm afraid I can't ride my bicycle. I also think I have some sort of dad responsibility this weekend because I really phoned it in last weekend because I was at PAX. But Laguna Seca is literally, it's 2.5 hours from here. God damn it.
I know.
God damn it. Maybe I'll pop down for a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know.
We also have the World Endurance Championship at Fuji International Speedway.
Yes.
A motorsport racetrack standing in the foothills of Mount Fuji in Oyama, Suunto District, Shizuoka Prefecture.
Bet the hill climb there is beautiful.
I'll bet it is.
We also got Nesquire.
It's are we back in the lottery? Is it the 400?
I want you to take a wild guess where we are.
Kansas City, Kansas.
No
Laguna Seca?
No, sadly not.
Saxon Ring?
For the real wild card here, the Hollywood Casino.
Oh, nice.
400.
Beautiful.
There is kind of a theme, though, throwing your money. And crossing your fingers.
Down the drain.
Yeah.
The house always wins.
Indeed. The House of Speed won this weekend. Danny.
It did. And speaking of red.
Oh.
Look red, at that book. Red in color and red in form.
Wow.
I found the book. Do you want to know what happened on this day?
Do I?
Half of it you want to hear about. I don't pick the days. I don't pick the days.
All right, hit me.
Do you want the good news or the bad news first?
Let's take the bad news first.
Okay, we'll get the bad news out of the way. Today in 1970, Clay Regazzoni took his first F1 victory in the Italian Grand Prix at Monza. But there was little celebrating in the paddock as Lotus driver Jochen Rindt had been killed in practice the day before.
Oh, man. I feel like we already went over this. Clearly not.
Clearly not. There's, unfortunately, in the dangerous pass of F1, if you cram, 70 years of it into one tiny book, a lot of it comes up. Anyway, Jochen Rindt and his illustrious career and tragic death aside, Englishman John Surtees delighted the Tifosi today in 1964 with victory in the Italian Grand Prix at Monza at the wheel of a Ferrari. The victory helped him win the world championship that season, making him the only man in history to have won world championships on two as well as four wheels.
Whoa.
Yeah, how about that? We're not talking about that time Schumacher lost his wheels and kept driving around. We're talking about motorbikes, folks. The race was also the last for French driver Maurice Jesus. In all my years of pronouncing difficult surnames, this might be my final boss. Maurice Trintignant, 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 Maurice Trintignant, wow. Who retired, and is it because he died? It's not. I knew that's what you were thinking. It's not. He did not die. Well, he did probably eventually. He is all but human. But it was his last race because he retired at the age of 47.
Oh, wow.
Hell yeah. Fernando Alonso, stick it out, man. You got to beat Maurice's record. To win a world championship race. And sorry, I should start that sentence again. The race was also the last for Maurice Trintignant, who retired at the age of 47. He was the first Frenchman to win a world championship race and won the prized Monaco Grand Prix twice. So there you go. That was back in 64. So Maurice, an early successful Frenchman in a sport which has had many of them now. So breaking through the ceiling. Fair play, Maurice.
Wow. John Surtees won one Formula One World Championship. He won seven in motorcycling.
Wow.
And he's got a really sweet looking bike.
How was he in did he do unicycling at any stage or... or truck driving or anything that was...
trikes.
Trikes, yeah. Exactly. No, didn't do it?
Yeah.
Yeah. No. Sidecar.
I think he did Isle of Man, too.
God.
He live?
I know, yeah. He lived loud and fast.
83?
John Surtees?
I think, yeah.
Fair play.
Yeah. All right, Danny. Well, thank you again for doing the hard work.
No problem. You do it every other week.
Final thoughts. Now that we're saying goodbye to Monza, and we'll be back next week for the pre-Singapore show.
Yeah, I think Monza to me in this current sort of past couple of years has felt like, we come back from the summer break, but it's not quite the middle. Monza always feels like it's like, I guess maybe it's because it happens around the same time autumn kind of happens, and F1 does sort of hug onto the northern hemispheric seasons that way, where you kind of feel like Thanksgiving and Christmas is when it, you know, Thanksgiving it ends and Christmas is when it's gone. So I always feel like Monza is sort of feels like the beginning of the end in many ways. In some ways it's sort of like put up or shut up time in the championship, where every single point feels like it's worth so much. Obviously not the case up front, but I do think we have some interesting battles in the constructors and also basically everywhere else almost. So yeah, still a lot to play for. I do think as well, and maybe this is just being a European, that a lot of these places feel a bit more closer to home to me. And this section here where we end up going to Asia and then North America, which I guess feels a little bit more homely now, but then definitely South America, that feels like Mexico and Interlagos and Abu Dhabi back again. It starts to feel a bit more like the sort of world circus again for the last couple of races. So I'm looking forward to that. Yeah,
cool. Me too. And if you'd like to support the show and get access to all of our bonus episodes, an ad-free version of the podcast, and the official Shift F1 Discord, you can do so over at patreon.com/shiftf1. Have a good race weekend, everyone. We will see you all next week.